2 years ago for the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, a lot of brands got their houses in order. So I think this was the real starting point where everybody felt like they had to do their part. Now, I mean, it's just been amplified more and more and more, whether it's African American, Hispanic, LGBT, the trans community. I mean, you want to talk about Gen Z and that community? That thing is coming like a bat out of hell, and it is not going anywhere.
Hello, Robin, with the Empire State Building behind you.
Yes.
I'm a little jelly.
I get it. I love showing it and having it be the real thing versus something fake.
I know, because these days of Zoom backgrounds, that's the first thing I asked you. Is that real? I've got a bad green screen behind me so that you don't see the photos on my refrigerator here at home.
Well, it is about family too, and all the people that you surround yourself with. So everybody's got to do what they have to do, right?
See, said from a very kind of humanist attitude, which I would expect nothing less from Robin Streisand. Your reputation precedes you.
Well, there you go.
Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is episode 27 of Insider Interviews, speaking today with Robin Streisand. Yes, as in. Robin is the CEO and co-founder of an agency called The Mix. Robin learned the value of certifying as both woman-owned and LGBT-owned, and then put an entire consortium together of diverse-owned agencies. Robin explains the imperative today, especially, of focusing on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion for any brand that wants to communicate well in today's society. Here's Robin.
So, Robin, I'm going to let you talk a little about yourself, but I just want to read these two lines from your LinkedIn profile. Mm-hmm. It says, in my decades of experience, I've founded my own company, transformed the digital marketing industry, and built several organizations based on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yay, you. It doesn't say that, but I'm saying that. And after 25 years, I'm still doing it passionately. And you have an anniversary.
Yes, The Mix actually turned 25 March 6th. So big deal for us. And it's been an incredible run. I don't know whether I want to cry like my girl's going to college, or I want to like reflect back on, God, it's been a long run. But it's all good. And I'm just really excited to be here now. I think like all those moments that you look at when you start something, you think you could forecast what it's going to be and what it's going to look like. But as you reflect back over that, I would have never thought I would still be where I am, loving what I'm doing, and still feeling like I have a sense of place and purpose on the planet.
Well, you brought up the word purpose, and that was a big reason why I wanted to speak to you as well, other than you're fabulous. But just to frame things up a little bit, I am also the editor of a publication called The Continuum, and it is all about the intersection of brand and demand. And we're going to take this podcast episode and also turn it into an article, because a lot of the contributors in our third issue of The Continuum will be speaking about brand purpose. And you truly just embody that as an agency. So let's use that as our jumping off point. And tell me about The Mix, and then tell me about the other organization that you run called Titanium.
Yes. So I think it's important to set the tone that I come from being on the client side. I worked for a Fortune 500 brand for 10 years. And over those years, one of my key responsibilities was working with agencies. And I would always shoot holes and ask a lot of questions. What I would see is oftentimes the A team would come in for the pitch, and then the C team would be there to run the account. And after a while, that really just didn't make sense to me. I would ask, what's happening? Like, these people come in, we buy the idea, and then I don't see them again. And, you know, the people that are on the account weren't in the room. And so there was a lot of that year over year, time over time, no matter how small or how big the project was. And it was frustrating, and it put a lot of additional pressure on what we were buying into, why it mattered. And so when I left and started the mix in my apartment in Union Square, I was very clear that what I always wanted to be was of the ones that were in the business, on the business, around the business, like the heart and soul of the business. And so we started off as, and because that's all there was, as a graphic design company. And, you know, it's interesting because back then people moved around a lot. Every 2 years, people would advance in their career. And so when I opened the mix, my network was actually quite robust for somebody that was starting up a company. So it made it relatively simple out of the gate to have a network of people that were available to you when you're starting your own business. I had it like, let's go, let's do this, and coming up with a name that was reflective of who the company was, which is to me very important, and then ensuring every step of the way that the name and the brand and all the tentacles of the DNA remained intact.
So, two-parter question, which might be a theme here, because you're giving me a lot of good meat. The first is, who were some of the clients that you got started with? And second, how did you come up with the name The Mix? It's not like based off of the cowboy from the early Hollywood days.
Typically, the name of the agency is either the principal's names, or it has to be something that's a reflection of who the people are. And we came up with a list of all the things that I loved. And one of those was cookie dough. And what is that called but The Mix? And because the company was grounded in love, we added the XX.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, so I'd have to figure out something tied to ice cream if I were to change my name. But you're right. I tapped into Moss and Moss Appeal. Get it? Mass Appeal, Moss Appeal. Yeah, me. Okay. Okay, but I like...
I love the name, by the way.
Thank you. All right. So you've got The Mix. And who doesn't love cookie dough? And who were some of your early stage clients when you successfully launched?
Well, I wound up working very quickly for, I'd say, three major financial services companies, people that I had worked with previously while I was at the corporation. And I found myself also working with different channel companies. Like, I went into the PR industry and I worked inside the production industry, and I was a creative resource for them. And so I got to learn how their businesses worked while I did what we do, which was creative. And we just became like a support function for them, which was mutually beneficial both ways.
I'm sensing the start of an evolution. So Moss Appeal as an agency, I surround myself with talented vendors. What I think you did as The Mix is you surrounded yourself with talented other agencies. Is that right? Is that sort of how Titanium came about?
I didn't know that then because I was just a little baby startup company trying to sell graphic design services. And I looked for people who I could provide those services for. In hindsight now, what I learned is by virtue of understanding how all those companies function and how diversity, equity, and inclusion is not front and center for them, what I saw was an opportunity to create an enterprise-wide solution with everything in marketing, media, and communications all under one umbrella. Listen, I could not have forecasted this, predicted it any better than the sun is coming out every day. This was just a hunch and an idea as the industry continued to evolve and ebb and flow to create a place where a brand could go for everything that they need. And then over the course of time, as diversity, equity, and inclusion has become front and center, it is now a go-to place where brands are coming and looking for help in how to meet their goals and objectives around working with diverse suppliers.
So to fill in the blanks a little bit, although we mentioned it in the setup that you built organizations based on DEI, really that is your DNA. Mm-hmm. So let's go back and fill in those blanks about your brand purpose as an agency and then as an agency company.
Yep. So again, I didn't really see the issue as clearly as I saw it when I went out on my own. I think like when people work inside of corporations, they have different stakeholders and initiatives and employee resource groups and things that show like from the outside in that a company stands for something. But when you're a woman-owned business, an LGBT-owned business, and you want to be seen, you want to be heard, you want to be amongst the pack, it's not always as easy as everybody might think it is. And I have to say, I learned the hard way. It was an opportunity along my journey where I won a large scale project and they asked us for our certification that we were a woman owned business. The truth is, I'm like, what you see is what you get.
And I'm a woman.
Hello.
Hear me roar.
And I'm a sole proprietor and I own this company by myself. And, you know, this is a couple years in. So we're up and running. Everything's flowing. It's good. We're doing great work. Clients are happy. What more can you ask for? And, you know, every turn forward, there's another hurdle along the way. So I learned that there's a certification that in order to win this business that you're required to have. And I didn't know what that was.
And what is that?
It's a certification that has five letters. And those letters are WBENC, which is WeBank. And what it stands for is Women's Business National Enterprise Council. So they are a government regulated body that certifies women business owners, 51% or more, owned and operated. Very important point there, because you could be woman owned, but your husband or your partner might operate the company, and therefore it's not true equality. It's not 51%. And so this 1% has been a real game changer for a lot of people in this day and age. I learned about WeBank, and then I learned that there were other national certifications that I never even heard of before. One was the NGLCC, which certifies LGBTQ organizations on the same 51% owned and operated. And then there's the NMSDC, which has the largest amount of certified businesses in it, believe it or not. That's for all other minorities. So that's African American, Hispanic, Asian, and all the rest. So here we have these three bodies that certify minority owned and operated companies. So now I have a certificate that says I'm woman owned or I'm gay owned. And now all of a sudden it's a new day. What that gave us was an opportunity to like register our company in these portals that every Fortune, I guess 1000 brand has. And it's how diverse suppliers get found is through these portals. But if nobody knows about them, how will they even know to go and complete an application? So I would say I was of the first marketing agencies to ever be certified. It's not 100% fact, but in my reality, 18 years ago, I was the only girl in the room that was selling marketing. So there might have been one or two others, but trust me, there weren't. So yeah. It was a new day.
That's great, Robin. And so it's sort of like you have to be findable, sort of like podcasting has a challenge of, you know, how do you find a podcast among the 2 million out there? So companies need to know that there's a directory or access to these various certified agencies. And then you have to market yourself as that. But you also have to market awareness that companies can and should sort of fish from these ponds. Is that right?
That's correct. And I will tell you, the first time last year, the ANA, which is one of the thought leaders in the space in marketing and advertising, they—
And that's the Association of National Advertisers, and it's the trade association, right?
That's correct. Of which the majority of all Fortune 500 brands are members, and they're the people that use them predominantly to get information, facts, figures, research, analysis, what have you. They published last year for the first time a list of the top 100 diverse suppliers. This was like revolutionary. Why didn't you just come to me for the list? Because I am the list.
So
hey, everybody's got to make money somehow, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I understand the mix, and you got certified, and Let's talk about the evolution of Titanium, which was 6 years ago, seven years ago?
Yeah, it'll be seven in June.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you're what, like how many people are there now?
We're at the 25 mark, and staying at this 25 number seemed to be the threshold where we could still continue to grow, do great work, and service our clients, and the need for other services, the need for digital, the need for social, the need for PR became front and center. And this goes on about like 10, 12 years ago now. And the mix is a creative powerhouse, right? That's what we do. People come to us for the overall strategy and building the creative to deliver it. But truthfully, without having a PR arm and a digital arm and an experiential arm, I kind of saw that we were running the risk of almost becoming irrelevant. Like we had to innovate and do something else. So again, staying to our 25, right? Because that's a good place to maintain a healthy culture. I had to come up with an innovative way to grow and scale up. And so I had it like a thought, what if we put together a collective of independent agencies that specialized in their lane and that we could build a full service enterprise-wide agency solution for a brand? This is about collaboration. And the thing that was the most important is that each agency had to also be certified minority owned so that diversity, equity, and inclusion was our core competency or differentiator. It was our foundation. So we would come to market as Titanium Worldwide as a force to be reckoned with, because people have to now work with diverse suppliers, and marketing is the number two spend that a brand has.
Got it. So should I call it an unwired agency company? How does it work?
Well, I have an agreement with each of the agencies, kind of like a master services agreement. So we're all good on how it works, the money, the paper, the contract. Then I have a contract with the brand, and it just makes it really simple and easy for everybody to kind of work together. And it makes it one point of contact and one contract for the client and for the agencies.
That's such a cool concept. And so are you almost creating the consortium based on what the brand needs? So let's say a brand wants to focus on a Black entrepreneurial message or targeting, or multicultural or LGBTQ, you have everyone in your arsenal that could speak to that brand's particular goals of targeting an audience. Yeah?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's brilliant. It's great. So here's a big question. How's business? How's business now versus when you started this? And how does that compare to when you started the mix in terms of brand purpose?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say that there's a silver lining to everything, but there is. Between what's happened with COVID and everybody kind of looking in, it has like unlocked this need for a brand to really look at itself. And we looked at ourselves and we have done very well during COVID, right? There's been a little bit of a light shining on us because people want to go to people they trust, people that they count on, that need little handholding. So the mix has done very well. Then this George Floyd situation happened, which shined a light on us even further. And brands now really waking up to the power of this diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so it's been very good for us. We've grown. We've won a lot of new business. And I'm actually quite humble about it. You don't see our names in the trades and in the publication. We're not out there tooting our horn, right? Because this is about authentic. And this is about the real deal. We don't need to be promoting ourselves like, oh, we're the new shiny object. We've been this way the entire journey. And now we're just getting to actually work with brands that see the value.
Robin, how do you vet these agencies for common attitude or common value? I mean, there are many who I would think do want to sort of toot their own horn and might be a little bit inauthentic. So how did you vet all of these folks that you invited into Titanium?
Yep. It's such a great question. We came up with criteria of things that really matter. So it's about culture. It's about collaborating. It's about taking the lead, but knowing when to sit back. It's about response time, right? Because an RFP comes in and those things are like turnaround on the dime. So there was very specific criteria. There's also revenue criteria, right? Like you have to be at a particular threshold because, you know, we're not here to save anybody. So the criteria is very tight and strict, and it does help you weed out people that want to promote their own agenda. The other thing I just want to say is that the market changes year over year. So we're really working hard to be front and center, relevant, flexible, nimble, and be adaptive to what brands need. And so I would say the area where we've seen a lot of growth is in our proprietary products.
What are your proprietary products?
So we have several products, but one in particular that's getting a lot of traction is what's called Supplier Diversity in a Box. It's pretty much a turnkey plug and play way for a brand to stand up a supplier diversity program. I would think everybody has one, but you know what? A lot of brands do not. And so this tool helps them get it up and running in a way that they would probably never be able to do on their own. And, you know, it's more an example of technology forward thinking for today around helping people help them with the things that they need.
Is that more what, say, the procurement department might use, or is that really in brand messaging?
I think it's out of the HR funnel, right? HR, procurement, supplier diversity. But supplier diversity plays such a big part across a company now that it has a lot of attention and it's gaining major momentum in the importance and the value.
Cool. So now we've got the structure. We've got a consortium of DEI-focused agencies. We have tools that you can help brands use Now let's talk about that messaging and what's going on with how brands are leveraging purpose-based marketing and what's the impact of it?
Yeah. So the impact, let's start front and center, is new business. The authenticity piece of this equation is everything to a brand. They are aware that there might be a lot of people that say that they do this. And now having the certification is giving them kind of like the shield that they need, that it's the real deal. It's not so much about the timing because we've been this way the entire journey. It's just this wake up moment for them and they don't know where to go. And all of a sudden we're like a shiny object. They still don't know how to really do it yet. So there is a lot of educating, a lot of hand holding. There's showing them who's doing it well in the category, who's not doing it well, and really just being kind of like that barometer and litmus test for transparency and authenticity in everything that they do as they begin this walk down this path.
And walk the talk. I love that. And I love how you brought it full circle from you getting certified and you being authentically focused this whole time. And now you're bringing brands along with you. Can you share some examples of who's done it well or any examples of your clients that you're particularly proud of? Drop names.
Yes, yes, definitely. I would say Mercedes-Benz is our claim to fame. It took 3 years of multiple decks and documents for them to look at the LGBT audience and who their customer demographic and psychographic is and how they actually ladder up perfectly. We don't even have to try. And then finally, it actually happened. And this year will be our seventh year where we're doing large scale campaigns. So all good there. Absolute, H&M, there's been lots of brands. We've done a lot of work for Disney, like blue chip brands that are looking to communicate and resonate with this customer.
So a couple of years ago, you did an interview and you said that it was a challenge getting brands to even try reaching out to the LGBTQ community or even dipping their toes in a small way. Has that changed as our recent couple of years have changed?
I mean, it has changed significantly. I think the area where it's changed the most is brands are cleaning up their house inside first. One thing to market out, but you have to be able to deliver on it in. So whether it's offering the NGLCC certification, if you score 100 on the HRC Corporate Equality Index, do you have an LGBT employee resource group? These are the pieces and parts inside that not all the time brands know how to do it, want to do it, don't even know where to begin. So there is a lot of cleaning house. 2 years ago for the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, a lot of brands got their houses in order. So I think this was the real starting point where everybody felt like they had to do their part. Now, I mean, it's just been amplified more and more and more, whether it's African American, Hispanic, LGBT, the trans community. I mean, you want to talk about Gen Z and that community? That thing is coming like a bat out of hell, and it is not going anywhere.
That brings up two more questions. So this might be kind of a funny question, but a lot of purpose-driven messages are these days really compelling for millennial and younger, for the Gen Z generation. How about courting the older generation? How do we get brands to consider all demographics?
So it's got to start from the top down. Without leadership buying into this, whether it's making it one of their pillars or one of their top commitments, I've even seen a lot of brands lately actually reporting in their earnings report that this is a priority for them and that they're now accountable to the street against numbers and KPIs against all of these, whether it's hiring African Americans, women, disability, veterans, it's got to come from the top down.
Great to know that there's pressure from the street, and the street would want to put that pressure on because there's ROI to that messaging.
For sure. Again, if we just focus on Gen Z, they are powerful. They are coming like a force, and they care about this stuff in a way that, you know, you and I might not have ever seen or realized when we were looking for our first opportunities. But these benchmarks for success around purpose must be front and center on their website. We see you. We appreciate, we embrace, we stand for gender parity, transgender equality, all of it. Like, now's not the time to be living in Alabama.
Okay. So now we've talked about the environment. We've talked about the value of messaging. Let's talk about tactics and look at it through that lens of awareness and performance, or brand and demand. What's a case study example of something where you've grown brand awareness and also done, I don't know, direct response or performance marketing, all in that same lane?
The KPIs have been mostly focused on awareness. The reason being is that as they enter into these new markets, they spend a little money. And a little money only gets you on the map in a small way.
We're talking about brands embracing brand purpose messaging now. They're dipping their toes into diverse messaging, and they're not going full on.
Wild. Right? It's like when the George Floyd situation happened, everybody was everywhere, right? There wasn't one brand that didn't have some kind of commitment towards Black Lives Matter. But what are they doing now? And where is everybody? And I think February was a good benchmark because, you know, Nielsen and all of the reporting properties will be publishing, I hope to God, by the end of March, to see what impact this February had on the African American consumer around marketing and advertising. Because it's the first time where we've been in the state that we've been in, and February came and went.
Meaning Black History Month.
Yes. And, you know, brands were out there in a way that I have never seen in my 30 years of doing this. It's good for February, right? But what about March and April and May and June? And how do you really look at this marketing mix and celebrate these individuals all year long?
100%. And I was thinking that as well. It has to be, and not just Women's History Month. We happen to be recording this on International Women's Day.
Yay!
You know, one of our other contributors coming up in the continuum is multicultural agency founder George Plasencia of Republica Havas. And he has said, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. And we all have to recognize our built-in bias. I think that it's sort of like ripping the Band-Aid off. Yeah? Can you speak to that a little bit? That was a big sigh.
You have to start somewhere, right? And again, who am I to say what somebody should or shouldn't do? This is a long game, like perspective. This is about do the right thing now for the long haul. Invest in what matters to the broader audience. Talk to people in the voice, in the way, in the platform, so they could see that you see them, and be consistent and authentic about it. Don't just do it on those months. If anything, it's almost like you shouldn't do it on those months at all, and then amplify around those months so that you're actually seeing, because everybody is doing things in those months, right? Yeah. And it's almost like if you're a smaller brand investing for the first time in that month or that, you know, occasion or that time frame, you'll never get seen, right? And yeah. So brands miss out on an opportunity to highlight and celebrate that they're actually doing something.
Nice. Great advice. You've described having your cultural antenna up. So clearly, that's a reflection of that, what you just said. What else are you picking up on for 2021?
Well, I'm definitely seeing lots of work in the transgender community. It is a hot topic. Every brand is racing to understand this audience and how to tie their product back to who they are when they don't really know who they are. I'm seeing a lot of work around the sustainability and really like the 2.0 of DEI, like looking at environment, sustainability, and governance as practices and setting the tone for how all these individual initiatives kind of fit into a package.
Mm-hmm. The kind of triple bottom line version of things, people, planet, profit. Yeah.
People will feel better about going back to work. People are home. They're with their families. They've had these moments that they would have never had before. And for the first time, I think like people have to be incentivized to come back. I think we're going to see a lot of job turnover and change happening.
I know that you are also a fan of Jim Collins. So I'm going to ask you, good to great, exactly. So I'm going to ask you, if you could paint a picture, what's the most impactful thing that would take a company or a brand from good to great in 2021?
Invest in diversity, equity, and inclusion, training programs in-house, getting their house in order, looking from an outward perspective, how they're marketing to these different audience groups. And it's not about how much you do, it's that you do it well, and you do it consistently.
Beautiful. Okay, so we have top down, we have message, we have, you know, who you surround yourself and your principles as a brand. But what about the staffing? Because you said something interesting of you don't want to hire someone just because they're gay or just because they're Hispanic. You want to know that they're qualified and that they have the energy that sort of morphs with your culture.
Yep.
Talk about hiring and staffing and qualifications and that.
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of moving around. People are looking for brands that are serious, that are legitimate, that are real. I have kids that are graduating in May writing, saying, we see what you're doing in diversity and inclusion. We want to work for a company like that. So you want the best people for the job. I think this is the downside of social media, because you could read so much about somebody and formulate an opinion, and you really don't know what you're getting until you sit down with somebody and you look them in the eye and you have a conversation with them about who they are, what they're up to, and what are some of the challenges that they've faced along their career path and journey. And it's never what it says on LinkedIn or on this platform or on that platform. So people also need a chance. And I'm definitely all about that. I wish that I could be hiring only diverse people if it was up to me, right? But it's a very fine line. You know, the laws in today's world, they've just gotten more and more stringent, and you have to be careful. So anybody looking, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. And we're always looking for great people. So
excellent. Oh, I want to ask about you personally. Yeah. Because you've been married for how long?
Yes, Linda and I just celebrated 22 years in February. We have two children. Our daughter Alexa will turn 35 April 6th, and my youngest daughter Andrea just turned 30. We're busy, right? We're like, the family is evolving and growing. And you know, if I could just stop time now, I will say this whole work from home, while it was good for a minute, I miss everybody and the connection and the networking and the just seeing what's out there from everybody. I'm definitely longing and desperate to get back at it. So it can't happen quick enough.
Yes, completely agree. You know, I am not going to do this here because of your last name. But if I were to sing on a podcast, it of course would have to be People Who Need People. just a little nod there.
Yes. And just so you know, yes, it's true.
We'll leave it at that. Robin Streisand, what a pleasure to speak with you, to see the Empire State Building and all that stands for behind you as we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion in media, marketing, and advertising. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, an honor, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
Thank you. I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and let me know if you have a question or suggestion for a next guest. My theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable and Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. And thanks again for listening.